Greetings and welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, your guide to the legal intricacies behind the contract and fiscal laws that power the U.S. Army and the Department of Defense. I am Major Sarah Hickman.
And I am Major Daniel Franco. Together, we are your co-host. In this episode of the Far and Beyond, we speak with Mr. Doug Mickle about his career in the United States Army JAG Corps and the Department of Justice. This interview was recorded in July 2024 while Mr. Mickle attended the school and presented at the Contract Attorneys course. Mr. Mickle is an assistant director with the National Court Section of the Commercial Litigation Branch, Civil Division, United States Department of Justice. There, he supervises the National Court Section's bid protest team. Mr. Mickle is a valuable supporter of the school and the Contract and Fiscal Law Department. The opinions expressed by Mr. Mickle are solely his own and do not represent the views of the Department of Justice. Mr. Mickle, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Sir, can you describe for our audience your duties and responsibilities as the head of the bid protest team?
Sure. As the head of the bid protest team, I have a lot of support. I have four other assistant directors who helped me lead that effort, Steve Gillingham, Deb Bynum, Corinne Niosi, and Bill Grimaldi. And I'm glad I have them because the practice is growing exponentially with filings as more people are coming directly to the court than first going to the GAO. But what really happens is all protests that get filed in the Court of Federal Claims first come to me, and I triage the protests primarily by reaching out to plaintiff's counsel, getting an idea of what the case is about, then reaching back out to the agency, learning more about what the case is about. First, trying to see if we can resolve it to try to reduce litigation because I think all parties are trying to reduce the save money, save resources, save time, and see if there's a way we can resolve it or narrow the issues. And if we can, then after that, I'll assign the case. And that's basically what I do. Not only do I assign the case, but I manage the practice in that we try to develop training aids to make sure all the attorneys are trained well enough that they can handle it as well as the other cases, because every attorney in our office gets assigned a bid protest simply because we have so many of those.
And when you say you have so many, how many we're talking about, sir?
Well, it's funny. 10 years ago, I think our office had maybe 125 or 130. I took the team over the team from my mentor at National Courts, Kurt Manhart, and when I was his deputy, and we might have had 140. And last year, wow, we had 240. And this year, when I got in the car yesterday to drive down last evening, we were at 190, and we're not even at the end of July. So we'll be probably over 340 this year. So that's 100 more than last year. So, and it's just growing. And there's many reasons for that. Anecdotally, I mean, you know, we're still only talking 340, but that's still quite a few.
Definitely. What do you enjoy the most about your job?
My favorite part of the job is, well, one thing, everybody in national courts, all the trial attorneys and senior trial counsels gets assigned to bid protest. So I'm probably the one assistant director in national courts that gets to interact with every trial attorney in the office. And that's the favorite part of the job, because you get to interact with the people, which was the favorite part of my job when I was in the, you know, fortunate enough to be a judge advocate in the United States Army. The people make the organization, and we have fabulous people. The other part is over my career in the Department of Justice, all federal agencies get protested. So I get to interact with all the different executive branch agencies and meet their people and learn what they do. And I'm just always amazed at how the vastness of the executive branch and what great people they have throughout the government, the work they're doing to in their offices.
Sir, for some of our newer listeners, if you could just really briefly kind of explain what exactly is a bid protest?
Yes. I always wondered about that because bids are for, you know, sealed bids. And there's so few of those now. I mean, back in the day, everybody put in a sealed bid for fixed prices because they're buying like commercial type items. But now most are negotiated procurements where you submit proposals. So, you know, you would call them proposal challenges. But bid protests are at the GAO or the Court of Federal Claims, where they file a complaint challenging a procurement decision, whether it's pre-award or post-award, and decision of the agency involving a procurement decision, and then they come into court.
Thank you, sir. So as you mentioned in your role, you handle a lot of bid protests and you work with a lot of different federal agencies, including various different military branches. When dealing with these protests, the DOJ works with the contract litigation attorneys from the military. Can you expand on what that working relationship looks like? How do the two entities work together in preparing a bid protest case?
Sure. Because the Court of Federal Claims, the defendant in the Court of Federal Claims is the United States, unlike at the GAO where it might be it's the agency, or at a district court where it might be some other type of dispute, service is done by the clerk. So we get notified of the case through the 24-hour notice process. I reach out to the agency. They provide some, in the 24-hour notice, the plaintiff has to provide us some contact information. I reach out to the agency contact. I have, developed over the years relationships with everybody throughout the executive branch and the federal government. So I reach out to those individuals and say, hey, we just got this 24-hour notice. Would you have your assigned counsel contact me at their convenience once he or she has kind of got the 30,000-foot level understanding of what the procurement's about? Then we have a conversation and we try to figure out the who, what, where, when, how, what are you buying? Where are we in the procurement? What's the criticality? So we can try to have a nice conversation when I do call and start developing our defense. But it really is a team effort. While the Department of Justice is lead on the case because the United States is the defendant, it's still the agency's procurement and we want their input and we need their input because, they've lived with that procurement. They know the record better than we do and we need their help. And we're encouraging our attorneys, especially now more than ever, that when you have those calls with the agency, that it's not just the lawyers. I want to invite everybody. I want as many people as the table to pull the rope with us. I want the program people. I want the contracting officer. And for instance, in the Army's case too, is the Army, we work primarily with Andy Smith's group at CLIP, but in many cases, there's an agency procurement team, like for instance, at AMC or some other camp posting station. So I want them involved too, because the more people who can tell me about the procurement and let me know what's going on, we'll have a better understanding of where we need to go and how best to defend it. And I'll also understand, okay, who do I need to assign this case to? Because, who might have a specific experience handling this specific issue? For instance, OT protests right now, kind of our hot issues. We have some people who have some special expertise in that. I can put that person on that. And that way it helps our office more efficient because, they're already running with the ball, so to speak. It's not a crawl, walk, run process with somebody in our office. So.
And when you mentioned OT, you're talking about other transactions.
Yes.
Sir, I'm curious, how did your career at the Department of Justice begin?
How I came to DOJ, sure. I was the chief of the General Litigation Branch in Army Litigation. I was back in D.C. at my second tour at Litigation Division. I had started General Litigation. They were handling kind of like what I would call installation lawsuits in federal court. At the time, too, General Litigation also handled contract litigation. At that time, it was CAD, Contract Appeals Division. I think it was nicknamed. They handled the board litigation and GAO. But at that point, bid protests in federal court, as well as contract disputes in the Court of Federal Claims, as well as some other types of issues, would be handled at Litigation Division. So I had some exposure to contracts and I was interested in that. But I was at a couple ABA events and I ran into some folks and they were looking for people. I was thinking of retiring at the time. My wife's an extremely successful lawyer and very proud of her. So she had some opportunities. I was thinking of retiring. They had an opening. They were looking for somebody primarily to litigate military personnel litigation cases. I had experience in that. It's extremely niche practice, trust me. So, the opportunity, as I've told everybody, I'm really the Forrest Gump of like JAG Corps assignments. I just kind of like fall into things. And this opportunity arose and I jumped at it. I got hired and 21 years later, actually, I think it's 21 years next week. It'll be 21 years of justice.
Wow. So we 20 at the Army.
21 in the Army, 21 in DOJ and still counting.
What a career.
Yeah. Wow. So, sir, what motivated you to join the Army?
Again, it was more happenstance. I think I told everybody I was kind of a mediocre high school football player. I was small and I was slow, but some schools in the Northeast were recruiting me and one of them was Army. So I got exposed to the Army. And while doing that process of looking into it, I learned about ROTC. I thought ROTC was a good opportunity for me to kind of still go to a college where I could play football, but also then have my education paid for. And at the end of there, I'd also be have a job. And it was fortunate enough to receive an ROTC scholarship and went from there. All along throughout the process, I don't know why, because I made some really dumb decisions in my life, but all along, the smart decisions I made, I found good mentors who told me, my ROTC mentor said, you need to go to Germany. There's great units and great experiences. I got commissioned and I was fortunate enough to go to Germany. Had a lot of opportunities, learned a lot from there. I got assigned back to Washington. Somebody said, you should look into this FEP program. And I remember the quote, my boss said, you'll never get selected, but it can't hurt. You can't hurt to apply. I applied. He came in and said, I can't believe it, Mikkel, you got selected. and everybody else said the same thing. Mikkel got selected for FLAP. Must have been a down year. So, and then we went from there.
So when you mentioned FLAP, it's a funded legal education program, right?
Funded legal education program where the Army assigns you to law school for 3 years. And that's kind of your assignment. It's a wonderful program.
I think one of the takeaways here is you're always willing to take a chance to just take another opportunity and see what is there for you.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it's to take a chance or just, you know, if someone I respect says this is something you should do, it's a good idea. And I'll say, yeah, I'll try it. And it works out. So, yeah, you shouldn't be afraid to take advantage of an opportunity out of fear of failure. You should need to take a chance, you know, take advantage of those opportunities. Yeah.
And so are there anything about those experience as a Army JAG that helped you as an attorney in the DOJ later on?
Yes. I mean, the Army prepared me very well for working DOJ because one is our office is extremely busy. And one thing the Army prepares you for is you have to always be ready for the unexpected. You have to really be able to adapt and handle change well. And you have to really, you know, planning and execute, you know, one third, two thirds, you know, that, you know, there's always a lot of suspenses and you have to realize you got to be able to triage those and find out some things you know, not everything can get your A answer. Some things, you know, you can get by with your C answer. Some things you can get by with your A answer. Some things you got to put off for a week if you can. Some things need immediate attention. You just got to be able to juggle a lot of balls. And I think the Army does a really good job of preparing you for that. And you just got to stay mission focused and keep going forward and get things done. And I think the Army does a great job with that. I think the Army also did a great job, especially as I moved up the ranks, of trusting the people who work for you and delegating the work. If you train your people well and give them the opportunity to excel, they'll do it. Trust in your subordinates. I know in many cases when I assign protests, I just say, I know you can handle it. Run with it. And while I'll review the briefs or provide advice here or there, I know that it's in good hands and it is. So I can't write every brief or go into court all the time and litigate every case. You've got to trust your people. And I think the Army really trained me very, very well to be able to delegate and watch well-trained lawyers who work at the department excel. And that's enjoyable to see them achieve success from, you know, efforts and training that I might have been a part of.
Sir, for individuals who are interested in working in contract litigation within the DOJ, do you have any advice for people getting started?
Sure. You know, many of the folks who come to us at national courts, believe it or not, don't come with a lot of contract experience. Those who do are primarily from the agency. Some folks come from law firms, but their experience might be limited to a single issue or one or two cases. So they come from the agency. I would say one thing we do a lot of, which I didn't do as much in the Army, is you have to be a really strong writer, but you can improve upon those skills. But I would say if you really want to come work at national courts, and we're always looking for really strong attorneys who want to be hardworking and want to represent the United States, I'd say when you get an opportunity to be an agency counsel, put in that extra effort and always be willing to help and assist and always talk to your counsel at DOJ and say, you know, how can I be a force multiplier? You know, so during discovery, you know, the volunteer to say, why don't I take the first stab at drafting those requests for admissions? Let me do the draft and the statement of facts. Is there anything I can do? Let me prep that witness, you know, to take advantage of. Nobody at my office is going to tell somebody, no, why don't you sit back and don't do anything? I need more work. You know, I that's not going to happen. And once you show that you can do that work, then they're going to come to you and say, hey, do you mind taking on this next issue? Can you take even more? And then at the end of the day, when you submit your application, you're going to have an advocate for you inside the wire, so to speak, to say, Sarah Hickman was a great agency counsel. She'd be a great teammate here. She's shown that she can do the work here. I think that's how you could really help yourself get ready to come work in national courts.
Sir, thank you so much for your time and being here with us and sharing your valuable insights with us and our listeners. Until next time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of The Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
We love to hear from our listeners. Please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The information can be found in the show notes from today's episode.
The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General's Corps, the Department of the Army, or the Department of Defense.